and welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I am Scott Nye.
I'm David Bax.
Thank you for listening. David, how's it going?
Yes. Oh, all right. I hurt my knee just in time to walk around the uneven, icy sidewalks of Park City.
You'll stretch it, right? That's the idea? I don't know. I don't know how to take care of the legs.
You know how you take care of an inflamed muscle? It's called rice. Rest. What's the second one?
Ice?
Yes, it's rest, ice, compression, elevation. I've been practicing price, painkillers, rest, ice, compression, elevation. That's what I've been practicing.
I do remember one Sundance, I literally just woke up and had terrible back pain one day. And it was like the day we're leaving for Sundance. I was like, oh, this is going to suck. And you feel better.
Yeah. And this will mean nothing to anyone but you and me, Scott. But I'm still staying with the same people, like the same condo complex that you and I stay at together, but Sundance no longer uses the Mark as a venue,
which means
it's no longer a shuttle stop.
Oh, so God. I have to,
like, walk to the Eccles, or I'll probably Lyft or Uber depending on how my leg feels. Anyway, that's enough Sundance talk. You'll get plenty more Sundance coverage to come. We have a guest, so we don't normally do a top of show thing, but I do want to remind people and also clarify something and also apologize for something. I have a lot to do. But if you sign up for the Patreon between now and, if you want to cut down to the wire, I guess like January 28th or 29th, you will get a ballot. You will be able to vote for the BPs. I should clarify, because I didn't know this was a possibility and didn't know I had to clarify this. You have to sign up at one of the paid levels. Apparently it is possible to sign up for the Patreon, but not pay anything and not get anything, but you're technically a patron, I guess.
But you doesn't sound like it to me.
I mean, I guess you would then get the ability to ask us questions for the mailbag, but you wouldn't be able to hear us answer them. So I don't know.
Never know the answers.
But anyway, I didn't know that was even a possibility, but so I wanted to clarify, in order to get the BP's ballot, you have to sign up at one of the paid levels, $2, $5, or $10 per month. You can see what that all, and it gets you some great stuff. It's not, you know, we're not trying to hose you over here. So I want to clarify that, remind people you have the ballots are due January 29th. So the sooner that you can sign up, if you want a ballot, the better. I also, for patrons, you might have noticed there wasn't an episode last week. Hopefully that means there'll be two in short succession, but there also might just be a lost Patreon that never gets posted because of some Byzantine technical issues that I won't go into on the podcast. But what I will go into is telling you about tweakedaudio.com. Tweakedaudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. I use them each and every day. Today, I was rocking out to a Denver, Colorado punk band called Dead Pioneers. They're indigenous native punk rockers, and their songs are very politically minded, very much shout singing about indigenous rights and anti-colonialism and stuff like that. And I really dug it. And it sounded great in my tweakedaudio.com earbuds. They're available at a low, low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low, low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Scott?
Hello.
Well, hello, but be quiet because I'm going to introduce our guest.
It's that
time of year where we're kind of getting into our wrapping up the year that was, as we lead up to the Oscars, which are the first Sunday in March, I think, this year. And One of those, this is a relatively new addition to this, but this has got to be like the fourth one we've done, I think. Maybe the third. We are joined by longtime friend of the show, my former co-host over at the previous Theon podcast, to talk the best needle drops in movies of 2023. Please welcome back Sean Ingram.
Hi.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Also good. Well, my knee hurts. I don't know if you were listening.
Yeah. And hello to Scott, of course.
Hello. Yeah.
This is the fifth.
Oh, this is the fifth. Okay.
It was David and Tyler and I did the first one. Then it was just me and David.
Right.
The second year. Then the third year. Then we've done two with...
Yeah, the special
this
one.
The special episode. So maybe
the all-time needle drops.
The fourth year and the fifth.
Fifth overall needle drops. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Sean, I know you're to get back to my knee, you're a runner. Any yes, advice?
Don't do it. Yeah, it's, I mean, I have no real advice. I've actually never had knee problems, but just, yeah, don't push through.
No, yeah.
Don't, yeah, if you have pain, it's not.
Not worth it.
It's not worth it, yeah.
Yeah, I just need to lose some goddamn weight is a thing. That's, honestly, that's what it's about.
Is that a self-diagnosis?
Yes, that is a self-diagnosis. The doctor at the urgent care, when I told her that, said, don't be so hard on yourself.
That's nice. A good doctor.
Yeah, yeah, she was nice. Okay, well, let's get into it, shall we? We're going to talk about our favorite needle drops in 2023 movies. We've got five each. I haven't prescribed a methodology, but I think in past... I know I have generally gone alphabetical by movie title. I can't remember if that's how everyone else is doing it, but doesn't matter. How have you guys decided to organize yours?
I think I mostly just organized it by vibes and hoping that one of you guys will mention one that's on my rough list of like seven, and then it just like hacks those out right away.
Yeah, I organized by what do I remember?
Well, I keep track through the year, but Sean, you and I were texting earlier today about how it was hard to come up with, like, you didn't have a lot of, I mean, and Scott just said he had seven, like, there aren't a lot of honorable mentions this year.
I have another level of mentions, but yeah, I did have a hard time assembling my list.
Yeah, harder me
than
too
last year for sure.
Although that said, I still, up until the last minute, I'm still not entirely sure how I'll go on one of them. There is one that it's hard for me to pick, but I'm hoping one of you picks the other one.
Perfect.
I have at least one that bends or breaks the rule, but if you guys want to call me out,
yeah,
you are welcome to do that. I can choose
one. One of my honorable mentions bends or breaks the rule, and I wonder if it's the same one. It might be.
See.
But
well, what is the rule? We should state the rule for the listeners.
Oh, so...
And for maybe for me.
I mean, I guess it isn't rules. It's just guidelines. Generally, when we're talking about needle drops, we're talking about pre-existing songs that are either played on the soundtrack or diegetically in the movie. But we generally exclude things like end title songs or end credit songs. What else have we excluded in the past? Do you guys remember?
Definitely like, yeah, original songs.
Original songs are out. Yeah.
I excluded this year, and I think I've excluded in the past like karaoke scenes. There was one a great karaoke scene from this year that I didn't.
Yeah, but don't go into it because that might be.
Don't talk about that.
All right.
Yeah. So a karaoke scene technically would be breaking the rule, but. You know, in a thin year, why not?
Sure.
And it's a great scene if we're all thinking of the same one. So last year I went first and then regretted it because I kept stealing everybody's picks. So I think the order this year will be guest of honor Sean, then longtime guest co-host Scott, and then I will go last.
All right.
Okay, so Sean, kick us off.
Okay. I'm not going to go alphabetical because the first one alphabetically might be my favorite. So I'll hold that for a second.
Alphabetically by movie title?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I still wonder if it's the same. If this is different, but now I wonder if that's also the same one. Okay.
No. I'm going to go with Thuddingly Obvious, and I assume it's on somebody's list or honorable mention at least. Let's talk about the instrumental cover of PIMP by 50 Cent in Anatomy of a Fall.
That was the first one I thought of.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I mean, not only is it very prominent in the movie, it's crucial to the story.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know, maybe you guys can, is that the first time that we've talked about where a needle drop or a piece of music is like plays a role in the.
I can't be the first.
Well, I'll just
time.
Say that there's a, huh?
We must have talked about other times. I just, nothing's coming to mind, but yeah.
Yeah. But, so I liked it because, it's a great character moment for a character you don't see for like 45 minutes, an hour into the movie.
Right.
You sort of, it's like your first, it's really your first like glimpse of what the main character's husband, who is playing the song in his workspace.
Mm-hmm.
He remains unseen, but he's playing the song very loudly. And yeah, it's kind of your first glimpse of what this guy is like. And he's kind of using the song as an assault. And it's also a great choice for an older, or middle-aged French guy, something he might, something he would think was cool, but not too like distracting to work to, I guess. So yeah, really good. And yeah, I mean the original song, I'm a fan, but
it's a classic,
but, I forgot what I was where I was going.
But yeah, I didn't put it on my list. I probably should have thought to do that, but I can't remember if you mentioned that the song also plays on repeat.
Yes. I was gonna say you hear it a lot throughout
you
the
hear
movie.
It a bunch, yes.
But in that way, and in only that way, Anatomy of a Fall reminded me of Adam Wingard's You're Next, which has Dwight Twilley's Looking for the Magic on repeat at the house next door, where Caitlin Shile gets killed at the beginning. Caitlin Shile and Larry Fessenden, I think, are the people who get killed in the opening like tease of that movie. So yeah, I definitely thought of You're Next, and also R.I.P. Dwight Twilley, whom we
don't
do like in memoriams, but he passed away this past year. Good song, and yeah, also good song.
It's a great choice also because it's like it's familiar but not that version of it, and so you're like this music kicks on, you're like, is that all right, okay?
Right.
Originally apparently they wanted to use Jolene, the Dolly Parton song, which would have been like I think a little too on point thematically for the movie, and for that, like what he's trying to convey in that scene, which is like essentially annoying somebody he suspects his wife of cheating on him with.
Even though it's an instrumental
version.
But
I'm glad it didn't work out.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry if I think you cut out. Sorry if I
Oh, sorry.
Talking over you. Can you say it again?
Oh, I was just saying, I'm glad, I don't know if it was rights issues or what, but I'm glad Jolene didn't work out. It's a much more eclectic, strange choice.
Yes, I agree. And last thing I was going to say is, speaking of like character moments, if you know the original song, I think it's fair to say it's a misogynistic piece.
Sure.
So there's that extra layer to it, even though it's an instrumental version in the movie.
Yeah, it definitely made me wish that I had seen Anatomy of a Fall in a movie theater, because I saw it at home and wasn't able to hear PIMP as loud as it
was so loud in
the
theater.
So loud.
All right, Scott, what's your first one?
Let's see. I think I'll go with... So as I was going through this, of course, like you come across some movies that just have pretty wall-to-wall solid soundtracks, and there weren't that this year. But one that I didn't expect to have such a great soundtrack was BlackBerry. Rise and fall movie of the BlackBerry. Mm-hmm. It has a pretty great selection of 90s and aughts jams. But the one I'll go with is I can't remember if it's like a launch party for the product or like they hit a certain sales figure or whatever, but it's like a celebratory scene that takes place in like 2003. They throw on Return of the Mac by Mark Morrison, which is kind of a jam, but also like really out of step with the current moment. Like it's not like a new point. It's like almost a decade old. And it both captures like the spirit of the scene that they're trying to convey in terms of like, you can kind of get down to it. You can dance to it, but it's also like really out of step with the time. And so it kind of represents both like the nerdiness of engineers that like their idea of hip music is going to be something that came out 10 years ago, but also like the arc of the BlackBerry is that they will very soon fall behind the times. So it's a smart track in numerous regards. But I appreciate not quite a deep cut, but a slightly deep cut there. I almost picked Waterloo Sunset, but that's more of an end credit song, but is exceedingly thematically appropriate for BlackBerry because their headquarters was in Waterloo, Canada. So to drop the Kinks, Waterloo Sunset at the end of the movie is ideal.
I didn't see BlackBerry, but I unabashedly love Return of the Mac.
I. No, it's great. It's a great song.
But if you do, you know, and this is probably more for Sean because it's more of his alley. Do you know the Sada Baby version? Return with my strap?
No. No, I don't. I know Sada Baby, but I don't think I've heard
that. Yeah. Yeah. Sean, did you see
I did see BlackBerry.
Okay.
It that's a good point you make. What came to my mind, I've already forgotten the Glenn Howerton character, I don't remember his
name. Yeah. Who knows?
But the one kind of the inverse of what your point about Return of the Mac is they kind of use him as a timestamp, like when he's driving up, like it jumps to the early 2000s and he's driving in his car and he's playing the Strokes.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like setting the era, setting the scene. So they do that a couple times in the movie with some pretty good songs.
Yeah. At least they had a little better musical taste in that regard than the Needle Drops in Air, which I don't think any of us will have picked because all the Needle Drops in Air are so thuddingly obvious.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely. Yeah. All right. I'll move on. But because I mentioned Sada Baby, I have to mention, I don't know if either of you have ever seen the YouTube video of Sada Baby singing along to How You Remind Me by Nickelback. It's about a minute long and it is literally one of my go-to, like I need to cheer up like YouTube videos. It makes me so happy. All right, I'm going to jump in, and I don't know if this is the right pick, my other one I think might be one of Sean's, because I know he liked the movie, so I'm going to say with this, I'm going to start with the movie All of Us Strangers, and the song is the Pet Shop Boys cover of Always on My Mind, which is both playing and is sung along to by Claire Foy as they're decorating the tree. You were talking about BlackBerry being an actual period piece. All of Us Strangers kind of is and isn't a period piece. But Always on My Mind as a sort of melancholic love song that is also a remnant of the era that he would have been decorating a Christmas tree with his parents when he was a kid. All of Us Strangers didn't. I started to wonder this year if I am like becoming jaded because this is the first time that an Andrew Hay movie didn't make me cry. But maybe one of the closest it came to making me cry is Claire Foy softly singing along to Always on My Mind while decorating the tree with her husband and son. Any thoughts there?
Didn't see that one.
Ah.
Oh, it's great. I mean, it's kind of like just coming out. So I think for a lot of people, it's still on the TC list. But yeah, it's a great film. And I kind of forgot about that scene. But spoiler for one of our upcoming Patreons, one of my New Year's resolutions, make better notes of films as I go about these sort of things, because I totally forgot that they use that. And now, as you said, it's like completely coming back to me.
Yeah.
It's a good track. I know.
Yeah.
That. Yeah. Yeah. It really is. All right. Sean, round two, kick us off.
Okay. Let's go with a fun one. I think one of my favorites, I mean, they're all supposed to be my favorites, but of the five, I'm going to go with Avril Lavigne, Complicated, and Bottoms.
I think you stole one of Scott's.
was that on your list, Scott?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that, to me, it rides such a fine line to me. And I think maybe the generation I am plays into this, which I'll get to, but because it's kind of the perfect song for the moment, but I also laughed when it came on.
Everybody in my theater did. Yeah. It was a huge laugh moment.
But so like, it's both funny, but also like, oh wait, this kind of like totally works. And I think maybe part of the reason we laugh, Scott, maybe you'll agree, disagree, is like, at least for my generation, Avril Lavigne is not someone to be taken seriously necessarily.
Right.
But then I was thinking, you know, the filmmakers and actors in Bottoms are much younger than us. And maybe they don't have that baggage. Maybe they just love Avril Lavigne and they thought it was the song.
Scott and I actually talked about this on a tangent on the podcast, not about this scene, but about the fact that like people like, artists like Olivia Rodrigo, who grew up on Avril Lavigne and are now making music that people take seriously, cites Avril Lavigne as an influence.
Yes, someone she listened to growing up.
And so, yeah. And so now I feel like Avril Lavigne, especially like, what was it, last year or 2 years ago, coming back with a new album, which I didn't like. It does seem like she has sort of aged into that respectability, like the people that loved her before they knew better are now, and I'm obviously editorializing a little bit, are now grown up and take her seriously. But I mean, that like, that could just be us being wrong, you know. Like, I think about like, there was a generation of metalheads before my generation who like refused to take Pantera seriously when they were out. And then now all of us who were like in seventh, eighth grade, when Vulgar Display of Power like came of age, and like Pantera is now part of like the metal canon, you know? So maybe it could be that I'm just wrong, that Avril Lavigne is good, but I have tried to go back and listen and it doesn't work for me. And yeah, I never buy it with her.
I can't get that far.
Fake. Yeah.
I hear your point, but I can't get there.
Well, yeah. In interviews, Emma Seligman, the writer director, and Rachel Sennett, the co-writer, said that they were very aware of the effect that the song would have on the audience. It wasn't like an earnest pick. Okay. It was a song they enjoy, but it was meant to be a comedic needle drop that like also does kind of work dramatically for the scene. It like kind of rides the line very well and this is one of the things I admire about Bottoms altogether, is that it's able to keep making jokes while it has a dramatic arc. There's so many comedies right now, like Joyride had this problem this year, No Hard Feelings totally had this problem, where like as soon as it needs to like have an emotional arc, it just like stops the comedy. And Bottoms doesn't. It's like keeps the laughs going, but it still conveys an arc to it. And Complicated totally helps it do that.
Savvy enough to know that.
I think enough time has passed since Bottoms came out that I can point out how weird it is that now, between Glass Onion and Bottoms, 2 years in a row, we've had movies where pineapple allergy is a crucial plot point. Mm. How weird is that?
Well, another needle drop in Bottoms that I considered for the list was Total Eclipse of the Heart, which plays during the big like heists, or not even heist scene, it's like a property destruction scene, which is really where I started to admire the film. I was like, they're gonna blow up that van, all right, perfect. But Total Eclipse of the Heart also factors into a French film called The Five Devils. That's the karaoke scene I was mentioning. Alex Metropolis sings that.
I definitely thought you were talking about a different karaoke scene.
So did
yeah. So Scott, I think you're up.
All right. Let's see. I think I'll go with perhaps the movie that you're thinking of for the karaoke scene, but not that track. So Saltburn, I am a big admirer of in many regards, and quite enjoyed any number of its needle drops. And I'm going to cheat by mentioning too, I mean, Murder on the Dance Floor is obviously like the highlight of the film, coming at the very end when Barry Keoghan is dancing naked throughout the mansion, and definitely rules. But the one that kind of got me the most jacked was Dropping Time to Pretend. And like so many people who hate Saltburn have ragged in that moment of like, oh, now it's time for Barry Keoghan's character to pretend. So they're going to play Time to Pretend. I don't care about any of that. That's when the film is like having the most fun and just like letting loose and just depicting like a fun summer in these people's lives. And, you know, as someone who lived through the aughts at roughly the age the characters were, that's a great summer tract. Cue to that. So whenever I think of that movie, that's the moment I think of most fondly. So that's the one I went with.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I saw MGMT this past spring for the first time.
Oh, sweet.
They played at I can't remember which festival. I get them mixed up. Just Like Heaven, I think, was the one they
played at,
which is like millennial nostalgia festival, and I think they did Oracular Spectacular like front to back.
Nice.
So yeah, that was cool because I'd never gotten to see them in their heyday.
That's interesting. Though, did you know they're not really a nostalgia act? Like their most recent album has just as many streams on Spotify as like Oracular Spectacular does, which I was I only really discovered that in the last year, and I'm a fan, but yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either. But I guess, I'm not as huge a fan, maybe. Anyway,
talk about Saltburn, because I didn't actually see it.
Oh, man.
So that wasn't the karaoke scene you're talking about. Okay.
No, there's
we all had different karaoke scenes in mind.
Yeah. Okay, here's my question. Okay, I'll air this out. Okay, Oracular Spectacular came out in 2007.
Yeah.
Okay. When I'm trying to figure out what year Saltburn takes place. I know it's not important.
There's so many deep dives into this. It's a mess.
Okay. So it starts at the beginning. You see like welcome class of 2002 or class of 2006. I mean, and also Barry Keoghan says like, it's the first day at the first night at the dining hall. This is the first day.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is my American way of thinking, but I was like, oh, okay. It must be fall 2002 and the summer must be the summer of 2003, the summer where most of the movie takes place. That's what I'm thinking. That's the impression. That's the assumption that I'm making. But then, yeah, you've got, MGMT on the stereo. And also they're watching,
Superbad
on DVD. Which Superbad came out in the summer of what?
2007.
2007. So I guess maybe as rich people, they have some sort of connection to get a DVD of Superbad the summer it came out, when it was in like an August 2007 release. So it didn't take me out of the movie at all. It was just like, I don't understand what year it's supposed to be.
Yeah, so I had the same problem with the banner, but it turns out that's an American-English thing. So in Britain, there's like, people are on very different like schedules for when they'll start and graduate. Some people are on 2-year programs, some are three. So when they do the class of banner, it's for the year they start, not the year they graduate. But then I can't remember what song it is, but whatever song that plays at the bar when Barry Keoghan can't pay for the beer, that song didn't come out until 2008. And so like none of the timeline lines up at all. It's all a big mess.
Also, while we're nitpicking things about Saltburn that don't matter to anyone.
Yeah.
Why does Ollie order his eggs over easy if he doesn't like runny eggs? First off, he orders them over easy and what's it, Dylan? I can't remember. Duncan is the manservant. Brings him sunny side up eggs, which was what he ordered. But then also he says, I don't like my eggs runny. And it's like, if you don't like your eggs runny, you got to go over medium or over hard. Like over easy eggs are going to be runny when you cut into the yolk.
Maybe that's the class commentary. He doesn't really know anything about eggs. He's just making it up.
Only rich people know what over easy means.
I don't really know anything about eggs. I always wear them scrambled because I'm afraid of anything else.
I'm if I have toast, I'm a sunny side up guy because I love dipping the toast in the runny yolk.
Sure.
Ever since I was a kid, I was obsessed with that. All right, is it my turn?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think this is going to be on either of your lists. I can't remember exactly when the movie came out, but I only caught up with it over the Christmas break. The song is called Summer Holiday. It's by an act called Cliff Richard and the Shadows. And the movie is Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget.
I saw this movie, but go ahead.
Well, this is definitely an exercise in irony because for those who haven't seen the movie, it's there's a new chicken like plant, processing plant that like keeps the chickens from being scared or happy by basically brainwashing them by and giving them this like fun like escape, like almost an amusement park for them to like dawdle around while they're being brainwashed. And then towards the end of the movie, you finally see like the guy hits the button to for all the chickens to march to their slaughter. And so you've got all these smiling, happy, brainwashed chickens in unison marching to their slaughter while the song is going, I'm going on a summer holiday.
That's right.
I loved it. A great scene. I really liked the movie in general, actually. And that was a great scene.
Yeah, I thought the movie was fine. That scene worked for me really well. But that was the first film to drop off my animated films ballot once I saw six animated films.
Okay. All right. We're on to round three then.
Yeah.
Sean.
Okay. Let me go with one of my Ben break the rule choices.
Okay.
And if you want to disqualify, to shout it out, or we could talk about it. But I want to pick the Michelle Legrand scorps from The Go-Between that's incorporated in May, December. Now, the reason I think it's a cheat is I think it's a re-record.
It is.
Okay. It's very, very close to the original, but it is, I think, yes, it is a re-record. So okay. Technically, maybe not a needle drop, more of a...
I think I'm inclined to allow it.
Yeah, I think okay. It seems like it's in the spirit.
Yeah. Okay, well, what I found it a fascinating use of music. I'm sure you'll be talking about this movie a lot, but I think it's such an interesting, for me at least, it's kind of a distancing, has a distancing effect I don't know, not quite shocking effect, but certainly very like, what is this? What is happening? Or that's how I felt especially when it first comes in, which I think is the now infamous, we don't have enough hot dogs or whatever the line is.
Yeah, I mean, it actually plays over the opening credits, but that's, I think the hot dogs line is so like spot, like very accentuated. Like
yeah.
Calling attention to itself for sure.
Yeah. And it's very like, I think because it's a melodramatic piece of music, if such a thing exists, for what is generally not performances are not melodramatic. The tone of the movie is not like that. And I think, the whole, is it camp debate, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
Which I won't get into here, but I think a lot of that hinges on the way these pieces are incorporated in the movie, and which is interesting. It has people questioning and discussing and thinking. So anyway, yeah. Very, very good. I've never actually seen The Go-Between. I don't know about
it. No, it's been on my list forever. I love Joseph Losey, so I've long wanted to see it. But
my understanding is that that is more of a traditional melodrama.
It lets you know that there's a little extra energy to be paying attention to. Mm-hmm. And in a way that like maybe it's weird to say a traditional movie because there's a lot about even the script of this movie that's not very traditional. But just that extra energy that Todd Haynes layers throughout most of his films, the music kind of lets you know that to be keyed into that.
Yeah. Great.
All right, number three for you, Scott, which puts us at about the halfway point in here.
Yes. In which case, I think I'll go with, oh, tough choice between these two, but I'll go with the No Drop of Mariah Carey's Always Be My Baby at the end of Beau Is Afraid. So Beau Is Afraid has a lot of great needle drops in it. When his sort of like weird odyssey to get back home has reached its kind of zenith point. It's when Parker Posey's come back into his life, his childhood crush, who he's finally about to consummate a relationship with. And this song starts to play in the house he grew up in with the love of his life, kind of gradually semi-seducing him. And the song, I can't remember quite the specific details of the scene. I meant to rewatch this today to kind of reassert myself within it, but it keeps repeating for some reason, keeps having to start over. And it kind of like, one, I mean, this is the title of echoing Joaquin Phoenix's whole deal, which is that he's like way too attached to his mother and has a sense of like permanent childhood that's then further echoed by him being still stuck on his childhood crush. But then just the fact that he keeps starting over and over and over again kind of underscores kind of the hopelessness of his pursuit, that he'll keep kind of making the same journey emotionally, at least in one form or another, again and again and again. And it's, you know, I mean, it's 90s Mariah Carey. It's a banger in many regards, but it's also just kind of like a great summation of a sort of arrested adolescence, and kind of adds, and I mean, it's weird to say that by the, you know, 2 hour and 30 minute mark of a film like Beau Is Afraid, it needed any kind of like extra strange energy, but it's evidence that the film keeps inventing itself and keeps finding new ways to upend its expectations.
Well said. And also it's very funny.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I also like Beau Is Afraid. I mean, I don't think I've liked the ending of an Ari Aster movie yet, but this is maybe the closest.
Kind of with you there.
Yeah. But I don't know if anybody else has any Beau Is Afraid there, because I do have kind of an honorable mention that I'll throw out now.
Sure.
Which is when he first finally comes home and sees his mother's coffin with the headless corpse in it. And it's the song is Everything I Own by Bread.
Mm.
I don't know if it's I don't really believe in guilty pleasures, so I don't know if you would consider it that, but Loki, I love Bread.
You're like Oprah.
Yeah, I love Bread like Oprah. In fact, one of my favorite needle drops, God, did this come up before? One of my favorite needle drops in the history of movies, and so we might have done this on the episode with Rico, is in Fat City after Jeff Bridges in the car has very like sort of sloppily and awkwardly, uncomfortably taken his girlfriend's virginity, and he turns on the car, and it's I can't remember the exact name of the song, but it's If a Picture Paints a Thousand Words, Then Why Can't I Paint You by Bread. And it's just like such a cheesy romantic song for this like moment that should be romantic but is not at all. Anyway, great movie, Fat City. That's not what we're talking about here. All right, my number three, I know this won't be on Scott's list because he doesn't like the movie, and I don't know if Sean saw the movie. It's the artist is named Iwolani Kahaliwai, and the song is called Ulu Palakua, and it is from the movie Fremont. For those who haven't seen Fremont, it's about a young woman who's an Afghan refugee. She was a translator who was given a visa to come to the U.S. She lives in the Bay Area and kind of lives this very like quiet life where she's not sort of like testing the waters of her new home very much. But as she sort of starts to break out of that, she has a blind date down in Bakersfield, and she borrows her friend's mom's car. And she starts the car in this like Hawaiian, like I looked it up, the album is called An Hawaiian Happening. So it's like this sort of like 50s, 60s, like Hawaiian luau type jam that she and then she just, it wasn't a song that she picked. It was just what was in the thing, but she listens to it anyway. And I kind of feel like it really aligns with where the movie is going and where in this character's journey is this person who, like, as she says to her therapist, like, she didn't want to come to America. She wanted to get out of Afghanistan, and America is where she ended up finding a visa and everything. And so she's found herself in this place that was never in her plan. And the movie charts this sort of journey of her finally sort of starting to come to terms with, like, this is where I am, and the best I can do is just, like, go with it and make the best of my life here. And so the idea of her just, like, turning on music that she has no idea what it is, and then just saying, like, well, I guess this is my Driving to Bakersfield music. I think it really spoke to me. It kind of made me chuckle when I watched the movie, too. Sean, did you see Fremont?
Unfortunately, I didn't. And the only reason it's on my radar, because I haven't seen anyone talk about it really, but the only reason it's on my radar is because Greg Turkington, Neil Hamburger, and Vermont Cinema at the Cinema has a big role, right?
A major part. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's I would say the largest supporting role in the movie.
So I do want to see it, kind of just like that.
But. Yeah. I saw it like on a screener before it came out, and then I got a chance to go to a screening that had a Q&A with the actress, whose name I will look up in a second, and Greg Turkington and the director, Babak Jalari. No, I can't remember. Apparently, the director wrote or came to Greg Turkington with this role, like approached him, Babak Jalali, and the actor's name is Anita Walidzada. So apparently he came to him with the role, and Greg Turkington, who was talking about how he is mostly used to being allowed to improvise, and here, because he's doing a scene with someone whose English is rough and spotty at best, he had to, like, actually stick to the script so she knew when he was done and when to say her next line. He's very good in it. And I love the movie. I know Scott's a skeptic.
Yeah, well, we're here to celebrate movies. I don't need to go into my thing.
Yeah. All right. So is that, Sean, your number four pick is up?
I think my number four pick is up. Okay. I'll be a little basic, I guess. And I assume this would at least be on your honorable mentions, but maybe not. There's a couple I liked, but in Priscilla, I think the one I want to pick is the Spectrum song, How You Satisfy Me, which was the trailer song, but it's also the song that plays when she goes to America and goes to Elvis's house. And it's, I don't know. Frankly, I just think it's a beautiful piece of music and very atmospheric and, well deployed.
Yeah, it was tough to, I mean, I didn't end up picking any tracks from Priscilla, but I definitely had someone in my number much. It was tough to, like, coalesce around one. I the closest I came to was the opening track. Maybe I Love You by the Ramones.
Okay. Yeah. Let's more on Priscilla in a moment. Let's all right, fair enough. Let's get Scott's fourth pick.
My fourth pick, I'm gonna go with a very old song that is a literal needle drop from the movie Passages, called Won't You Be My Sweet Blooming Lavender by Janet Penfold, which Franz Rogowski puts on to kind of seduce Adele Sotropoulos early in their kind of romance, as they're, you know, I mean, it's weird to say that his character would be falling in love necessarily, but he thinks he's falling in love anyway. And he puts the song on an actual record, so a literal needle drop. And the song kind of starts, and then he starts to sing it to her directly. And it's just such I'd never heard the song before. It's just, like, I don't know when it's from, but it sounds like it's from, like, the 30s or 40s, and it has a very kind of old timey romantic swoon to it. The kind of thing that a character like Tomas would maybe take advantage of and maybe have a little insight into. But it's such a beautiful moment. And each time I see the film, I've seen it now three times. I kind of forget about that moment, but it kind of, like, is this great little oasis of peace and comfort, within a very kind of torrid, dramatic showdown over the course of this brief running time. But yeah, I just thought it was a great discovery and a track that I'm sure I'll put on from time to time myself.
All right. Yeah, I had a... Well, I'll leave this for honorable mentions. Okay. All right, so for my number four... Now, Sean, you've described a couple of your picks as being like obvious or basic, but I am going to go super obvious and basic with my Priscilla pick, which is the very end of the movie, Dolly Parton, I Will Always Love You.
It's a great pick.
And it's, look, Priscilla, I mean, you know, you'll see where different movies fall on my top 10 list in 6 weeks or less. But I really, really love Priscilla. And a big part of it is that the movie gets so into the interiority of Priscilla and her, like, I guess the way that she is suppressed and the way that she suppresses herself and is suppressed by others, that it's not a movie that ends with a great big, like, Oscar clip type of speech. But it feels huge what she's doing. And I love that we get that scene and of her saying that her final scene with Elvis. And then we get the triumphant I Will Always Love You, which is a great song. And also has a relationship to Elvis. Elvis always wanted to cover I Will Always Love You. And apparently Colonel Parker wanted like half of the publishing rights to the song itself, I guess, in order for Elvis to cover it. And Dolly Parton, who loved Elvis and wanted Elvis to cover it, was too smart a lady to give that up. And so it's a song that Elvis never covered. So it was never his, not something that was taken away from anyone else. And so it kind of speaks to like Priscilla setting off on her own with the song that the Elvis never took. Great, great movie, great scene. I don't care if it's a super obvious pick.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Good pick.
Okay.
That's that.
Home stretch,
all
Sean.
All right. So I think this is my personal favorite, and it's not a literal needle drop like Scott's last pick, but it is a song that is playing in the scene. It's from the movie The Adults, and it's the I'm laughing at David. Yeah. My pick, I assume, is David's. It's the Men at Work song, Overkill, in the party scene.
This is the one, by the way, that I was like, I was haggling with myself over doing this or the Pet Shop Boys from All the Strangers. And a part of me was thinking like, Sean might pick this.
Yeah, you're damn right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just in brief, it's a party scene. There's three siblings sort of have a tense relationship. Michael Cera plays the brother. He's had a bit of an evening. He's gotten himself a little drunk. He starts. I think he's the first to start dancing to this Men at Work song. And then his sisters come in with Sophia Lillis. And who's the other actress? She's very good as well.
Hannah Gross, I think, is her name. She was Jonathan Groff's girlfriend on Mindhunter, the like hippie girl.
Right.
Yeah, they're all great in the movie.
Yeah, they're
Sophia
all
great. Lillis, banner year, by the way.
Yeah, great year.
Dungeons and Dragons movie and Asteroid City and this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, just quickly summarize. They're at a party, the song is playing. They kind of start dancing, then they're dancing together, and then they kind of, right when Colin Haig kind of goes up in the vocal, they kind of, I don't know, kick into it, or like they're free, their dancing becomes more free, as I recall the scene. And it's kind of a, it's hard to talk about without talking about the entire movie, but it felt like a pivotal emotional moment, and people should watch the movie to appreciate it, I guess.
Well, I get Yeah, for those who don't know Overkill, you've heard it.
It's a great song. Think about I've always loved it.
Yeah, it's a great song. Yeah. I got the, because so much of the movie is about them like falling into their old patterns of communication or non-communication with one another through these characters that they've created. And I don't know if you guys agree or disagree with me. I got the impression that this was a song that they had danced to as kids too.
For sure.
That this wasn't like what happened to be on the dancing together. This was
the dance is not, the dance is not choreographed, but I feel like they've danced, maybe danced together to this song before.
Isn't there, am I misremembering this? Isn't there a part where they fall into doing the same dance as in Godard's Band of Outsiders though?
I feel like I would remember that, but that would,
it would make sense. Maybe you're right. I don't know that I caught that.
Yeah, I feel like I would have noticed that, but maybe you're right. Yeah.
I can't imagine I'm just making this up anyway.
Yeah, you're probably right then.
Yeah. Mostly, I'm just glad that both of you guys have seen this movie because it's so good. Not enough people have seen it.
Yeah. Underseen. Kind of a sleeper hit for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Final pick, Barrett. Scott.
This was an easy number one for me once I kind of went back through my lists, which is Tell Him by the Exciters in Eileen. So
one of my honorable mentions.
Yeah. Eileen is kind of this like super gothic and very expressionistic movie that also keeps kind of all the sexual turmoil just barely under the surface. And like, a lot of it is about Thomasin McKenzie's character falling in love with Anne Hathaway's character and never really getting to quite consummate it, but they have this great long connection at a bar scene that then culminates in Tell Him dropping on the jukebox and Anne Hathaway dragging Thomasin McKenzie on the dance floor for them to dance to. And it's just a song I've always loved. And the scene is just so well done, both in terms of the dialogue and the way it kind of like ramps up and subverts expectations. Anne Hathaway does like a identity switching thing where she introduces Thomasin McKenzie's character as her own character to a group of guys. And it just keeps like challenging what we're anticipating from the scene, and the cinematography has all these great like pulsating colors to it, and then for it to culminate in this awesome dance scene that then like Anne Hathaway like elbows a guy who's like trying to dance with her, and she like goes back to dancing with Thomasin McKenzie. It's just a blast. And it's this great kind of like burst of energy amidst a film that's in some ways like very dour but has a great sense of humor throughout. And so for it to take the time out of itself to like have this super poppy dance scene was just such a total blast.
And tell me if I'm misconflating, but I feel like it's in within the same bar scene, because they're that's a very upbeat pop song that they're dancing to, but then they also start slow dancing.
Yeah, I can't remember what that song was.
No, I looked it up. It's called All These Things by Art Neville. And I kind of in my mind that scene is all kind of together. But yeah, the Tell Him is a great song.
Yeah.
Yeah, great pick. And another maybe underrated movie?
Yeah.
I really
will factor in very heavily in my top 10 for sure.
All right.
I'm a huge fan.
Okay. My final pick is another, like, it's not a deep cut. This is a big hit of a song. It's also the only song on this list that in the theater when the needle drop happened, I was like, that's going on the episode. And yet the movie is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem.
This is on my honorable mentions list.
The song is No Diggity by Blackstreet.
Yep. That was because on my honorable mentions.
It's so great because it soundtracks the montage when they first decide to start being crime fighters. You get this great montage of them fighting crime, but it's not just a montage. It's like tracking left to right, like an old school video game, as each one is separately going through a different room, but then it'll just like get to the next room and it's a different turtle, but it's like all one quote unquote camera movement. And what I love about the pick of the song is that like No Diggity is not like a high BPM driving like hard ass song. It's laid back and it's really getting across the idea that like at this early stage before they've met Ice Cube's character and everything, like this is all coming so easy to them.
There's swagger to it, right?
Yeah. And just from the moment that like acoustic guitar loop at the beginning of No Diggity, from the very moment that happened, I was like, oh shit, this is gonna be cool. And yeah, that is my, I'm not ranking them, but that is, like I said, that's the one that I was like, that's definitely going on the list. It's too much fun, that scene.
Yeah, I would say that's a good pick. Overall, the soundtrack is a little perhaps too catered to people our age.
It's very, yeah.
But yeah. But that one in particular, yeah, that was my personal favorite of the choices.
Yeah. So yeah, should we jump into honorable mentions?
Sure.
Yeah. Or should we go in the same order, Sean?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I punted it to honorable mentions, but the karaoke scene I was thinking of was in Fallen Leaves, when the the lead's older friend sings that song. And he's actually pretty good. And he then proceeds to spend the rest of the movie kind of bragging about his performance that night and how he should be a singer or he could be a singer. But it's kind of a crucial little moment for the character.
Do you remember what song it was, or do you know?
No, it's like, I think it's like a Russian traditional song or something. I couldn't figure. I looked at the song list, but I could not determine which one it was.
I think I decided because Falling Leaves is coming to Mubi like this week, I think.
Also, I know the movie doesn't take place in Russia.
Right.
Yes.
So Falling Leaves is coming to Mubi. I think I've decided I'm going to rewatch it before we do our top 10, because I saw it at Toronto and I loved it, and then like a couple months went by and I was like kind of unsure. It kind of kept falling a few places, but I started seeing it a lot of people's end of year lists, and I was like, I should probably remind myself why I loved it when I saw it at Toronto. Any others, Sean?
Just doing a quick check. Nope. Everything got mentioned. Yeah. Kind of a light year for me.
Yeah. Scott?
I've got a few. I was kind of banking on one of you guys mentioning something from The Killers, but How Soon Is Now would have been my pick from that movie.
That was the thing. It was just, there was no one that stood out. Like, I loved the fact that it's all Smith songs, but I couldn't pinpoint one. Yeah.
How Soon Is Now taking place over that opening assassination scene where it's like coming in and out of being like the main music, and then you hear it like kind of muted through his headphones, was like so great at building the tension.
That is cool. That is cool.
I might have gone with Glory Box. The Portishead in the
Dominican Republic. Yeah.
Yeah, that was good too. In my mind, the opening and closing track in A Fire was just a cool discovery for me. I'd never heard that song before. In Shotgun Wedding, at the wedding ceremony, the whole party sings I'll Be, that I can't remember the artist's name, but that 90s kind of slow ballad jam, great pick. Tom Sawyer in The Iron Claw. Oh man, it's like, I mean, it's a great song, of course, but it's a great montage sequence, really. None of us mentioned Barbie, but just, we got to at least make mention of Push and Closer to Find.
I thought about Push, but is it actually in the movie? It's just the beach scene where they're all singing it, right?
Right. So it's like, it's one of those like, does it count kind of things. Yeah.
Breaks the rules. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think Closer to Find counts.
Closer to Find counts.
On my honorable mentions, yeah.
And then speaking of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Unwritten has kind of a unexpected presence in that film. And Unwritten is also in Anyone But You. And then lastly,
Natasha Bedingfield?
Yeah.
Unwritten? Oh, okay.
I think it's during the newscast, right?
Yeah.
If you remember, Dave.
And then the very unexpected needle drop of Boogie Shoes by Casey and the Sunshine Band and Knock at the Cabin.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now my list is even shorter because Scott just mentioned Closer to Find. So I'll say, well, we danced around it earlier, but we never mentioned the karaoke scene in Saltburn is another Pet Shop Boys song. It's Rent. And for those of us who love the Pet Shop Boys and know that song, as soon as it starts, you see where it's going and you feel terrible for Ollie. But
I think that was also one of those songs that wasn't out when the movie takes place.
Wait, no, Rent would have been out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah, yeah. That's an 80s. Yeah.
80s song, yeah. Okay.
Okay. Let's see. The only other ones I'll mention, it's funny, I don't know if Sean saw it, but I know that Scott did, and neither of us had any picks from Perfect Days, which has a ton of needle drops.
Yeah, I thought of a few.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to pick one, I guess the first big one in the movie is House of the Rising Sun by the Animals, which is a one I really like, which is when you first get his morning routine driving to work. Yeah.
I never liked that song.
Hot take.
Yeah, that is a hot take.
It's too repetitive.
So are his days, it turns out.
Yeah. So it may be appropriate. Yeah.
My last one is a song called, it's called Then You Can Tell Me Goodbye by the Casinos. And it comes up a couple times in Savannah Leaf's directorial debut, Earth Mama. I think it's playing when she starts her car, but also in a later scene when she's, forgive me, because it's been literally a year since Sundance when I saw the movie. I can't remember if it's when she's visiting one of her, because she has kids who are in the foster program that she has to have like supervised visits with. And I think she plays the song again to like, as a kind of lullaby to like put the kid to sleep. And it's a very, very pretty song. Anyway, so those are my honorable mentions.
Right on.
All right. Sure.
Well, I think I was taking close enough notes. I'm going to actually throw all these into a Spotify playlist and then send it to David to throw in the show notes in case that's listeners awesome. Want to do a little 2023 jam. And if I miss any, by all means, you guys can send those along.
Now, did you just do the 15 or did you include all the,
I tried to get the honorable mentions as well, good. Yeah, we'll see.
Oh, that's why you were asking what the name of the Fallen Leaves song was. Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck.
I know. that might be missing. We'll find it.
Well, this was fun as it always is. And just, you know,
thanks,
generally
thanks for having me again.
Yeah. Thanks for coming up with this episode 4 years ago or whatever. Which by the way, if this is the fourth one, cause you mentioned, this is dumb. Just me making connections in my mind. You mentioned, the song from the Iron Claw, Tom Sawyer being in the Iron Claw. Mm-hmm. You had a pick from The Nest on the first one of these, which is also a Sean Durkin movie.
I know.
So he's a low-key needle drop hero.
He's good. Yeah, he's good. Yeah.
All right. I love because we, Scott, you and I did, I guess, 2 weeks ago, we did our favorite film discoveries of 2023, but this is the first episode of really like looking back at the year that was. And I just love it. I get so excited looking back. Stay tuned for more of those. You can find us at battleshipretention.com. You can email us at david@battleshipretention.com, tyler@battleshipretention.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Blue Sky at Davey Pretension or on Letterboxd at David Backs. Hey, check out Tyler on Twitter at More Lessons, or check out his GoFundMe, which is pinned to the top of the homepage at battleshippretension.com. He needs some help, and the video explains exactly where all the money will go. Also, if you want to help Tyler, sign up for the Patreon. And if you do it soon, you'll get a ballot for the BPs. Again, sign up at the $2, $5, or $10 level. I'm not letting any new freeloaders get ballots. What else? Check out my other podcast. It's called The One Where I Met Your Mother. I do that with my wife, Natalie. And that's me. Scott, what do you got?
Twitter at Rail of Tomorrow. Blue Sky, although I haven't been on there in a few weeks. Who's to say?
Is anyone on Blue Sky?
I know.
I still use Blue Sky.
I try to check in. I try. I really try.
It's not picking up momentum.
It's not happening. And Letterboxd, where another one of my New Year's resolutions is to really hone in and make sure I write down something about each movie I see on Letterboxd. So,
don't give away all your New Year's resolutions. That's for Patreon. Sean, where can people find you? What do you want to plug?
You can't really find me online, but I have a band called Weird Spirit. And since I was last on, we put out a new collection of music, an album, you could call it. It's called You Are the Architect. And it's on all the streamers. It's on Bandcamp. It's name your price, so don't pay for it. Send your money to Tyler or other charitable causes. Yeah, so check that out.
Well, thanks, Sean, for joining us once again. Thank you at home for listening.
And we'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.